that all Americans are affected by the worsening climate change, end quote. The climate crisis and those eager to take action are moving forward, no matter what President-elect Trump decides.
KBOO's news poet Dan Raphael knows his post-election hangover won't go away for a long time.
In many countries, Election Day is a holiday. If I was still working, I'd be taking today off, calling in sick. Later this month, I'll be giving thanks for the decades of a wonderful America I've experienced and for the friends who will help me survive the next 4 years. For Christmas, I'd like another country to move to. 8 years ago, the election results merely depressed me. Today, I'm despairing and very fearful, not only for what Trump and Project 2025 can do, but also because around half of my fellow Americans voted for him. Locally, the people I voted for mayor and Congress won, as did my two top choices for city council. If only Oregon was its own country or got annexed to Canada. Winter's nearly here. Reports are this may be one of the snowiest ever. This isn't a time to hibernate. 8 years ago, I greeted the day after the election wearing black. Today, I'm wearing a tie-dye of every color under a bright clashing Pendleton, standing so tall my head might reach the clouds. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 6, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Eliza Yurkov, and Ken Jones. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Mike Bowen, Alex Gonzalez, Brian Bull, Trimble Gomes, and Eric Gladys. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Jezaniah Hawthorne.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our wonderful members. If you would like to become a wonderful member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Portland Youth Philharmonic, America's longest running youth orchestra, enters its second century this weekend. The opening concert for PYP's historic 101st season takes place this Saturday, November 9th, at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. The program, conducted by PYP's musical director David Hattner, features Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, William Grant Still's Second Symphony, and Senza Maya, a piece by Mexican composer Silvestre Revueltas. To preview Saturday's concert, we're joined today by Hanami Froom, an 18-year-old alumna of PYP, and soloist on the program's Violin Concerto by Tchaikovsky. Hanami, we're recording this interview on Election Day, so even though you're the one with the big concert coming up Saturday, I think we're all feeling a little nervous.
Yes, we all are about a lot of things.
You're currently studying at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, and flew back to Portland, I think, just a few days ago. What's the week been like for you rehearsing with David and the orchestra?
I've had such an amazing week so far. It feels so good to be back in my hometown with PYP, and it just makes me feel very nostalgic because I was in the organization not very long ago. So coming back and as a soloist and being able to play one of my favorite pieces with the orchestra is like a dream come true.
When did you join PYP? At what age? Because you're 18 years old now.
So I joined the organization when I was 7 years old. I joined their youngest string ensemble.
And was David the musical director, the conductor of the string ensemble too?
No, at the time it was Carol Sindel. She was the conductor of the string ensemble.
And how did Carol and also David, as the kind of the musical director, prepare you for your term, your tenure in PYP, and help you grow as a musician?
So I feel like they've both done so much for me over the years, and they've really taught me so much how to grow as a musician. And I remember when I first joined the organization, because I was in their youngest string ensemble. Of course, I really looked up to all of the older kids in like PICO or PYP, like the older orchestras. But I learned a lot from them through rehearsals, lessons, concerts, and it still helps me to this day.
Do you remember your very first PYP concert? What was that like? Were you nervous, concerned, or?
So I guess, to be honest, I was not very nervous because I was also 7 years old. I was just super excited. I remember first going into the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, and that building is just so beautiful. And I was like, wow, this place is amazing. And to be able to play a concert there, it was just such a great experience. I remember like my stand partner, and just I remember like little moments from that concert. So it's really nice.
Now, you made your solo debut with an orchestra at the age of six. So I think that was before you joined up with PYP. So that first concert with PYP, well, obviously you weren't nervous, but it was a lot less of a stretch for you, even at 7 years old, than for many first-year musicians.
Yes, it was. It feels like I always love to perform for people, and just being able to have as many performance opportunities is great for me as a musician to grow. And I just personally love doing it, especially with others, even if it's like playing in an orchestra or playing a solo or playing chamber music. I love all sorts of performances.
When you were 6 years old and you did your first solo with an orchestra, what was the orchestra and do you remember the piece that you played?
Yes, so this was with the Oregon Symphony, and it was a we played the Bach double. It was, yeah, so I guess it was 12 years ago, and honestly, I don't really remember much from it. I just
You were six.
practicing for it, and that's it, yeah.
Now, amazingly enough, by the time you performed that first solo with an orchestra at the age of six, you were already playing violin for 4 years. You started when you were 2 years old.
Yes. So I started violin when I was 2 years old, and it was originally because my mom wanted me to actually become a pianist, but my fingers were too small to play the piano at the time. But she still wanted me to start some sort of music, so she looked into playing violin. And there's a lot of different sizes for violin. I think there's like a 1/16th size or something, and it's really tiny, but that was perfect for me. So I started when I was 2 years old, and then later I also started piano, and I did both instruments until I was around 7 years old. And that was when I decided I kind of wanted to do violin mainly. And I think PYP was a big reason why, because that was just when I joined their youngest string ensemble. And I was thinking, okay, like I like piano too, but I love to play in orchestra. And I decided to do violin mainly.
Now, playing an instrument at the age of two is kind of prodigy territory. Did the violin, as small as it was, smaller than the instrument you play now, did it feel like a natural fit? Were you able to play something right away? Did you just connect with it?
Yes, the thing is, I really enjoyed doing it, and I still I talk with like my family and my relatives, and I remember just a few things. But apparently, like even like every morning, I would just like run downstairs and just grab my violin. I really wanted to play, so I guess I always just like had that love for playing violin.
Do you come from a musical family? There must be some good genes in there.
Well, actually, my parents, they love music, but they are not musicians. And my grandma does play violin, but none of my family members are like professional musicians, but they love classical music and all genres of music. So I kind of always grew up listening to, like I said, my mom loved pianists as well, so like piano music. So I always listen to like Liszt or Chopin, and now I listen to more violin music, but
So you make your debut as a soloist at the age of six, and since then you've performed as a soloist with a long list of orchestras. I've just a sampling here: the Oregon Symphony, Vancouver Symphony Orchestra, Beaverton Symphony Orchestra, Amadeus Chamber Orchestra, the Jewish Community Orchestra, and PYP's own Conservatory Orchestra. Are there one or two concerts that stand out for you that are especially memorable? Hopefully for a good reason, not that a disaster occurred.
well, let me think. I feel like each performance is really special in its own way. And let me talk about when I played with the Portland Youth Philharmonic's Conservatory Orchestra. But this was actually, I played 2 years in a row. And I believe when I was 11 years old, I played the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto First Movement. And when I was 12 years old, I played the Sibelius Violin Concerto First Movement. But each of those concerts were super memorable in their own way. But it was really cool because I was in PYP in the oldest or like the oldest orchestra, like not the conservatory orchestra, but yeah, in PYP. But I still had some friends in the conservatory orchestra, and it was just so fun to be able to go to their rehearsal and perform with them. So that was a really special experience for me.
For Saturday's concert with PYP, you'll be playing solo on Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, composed in 1878 and one of the most popular violin concertos. Why did you choose this piece? It's a long piece, it's over 30 minutes, and it's very moving, very passionate piece of music.
So I feel like this concerto is just like an iconic violin concerto. Like everyone knows it, everyone loves it, and it to me it feels like it's just like a journey from start to end, and it has, like you said, such passionate, like expressive moments. And it was always a dream for me to dream of mine to play this piece with orchestra. So being able to do so in my hometown with PYP, which I was once a part of, is really like a dream come true. It feels unreal. So I'm really looking
Have
forward to Saturday.
you played the Tchaikovsky piece before with an orchestra, or maybe from one of the many competitions you've won?
So actually, earlier this year in September, I joined a music festival in Brescia, Italy. And I won their competition there, so I performed the first movement of this Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto with the Master Orchestra there, and that was a lovely
What
experience
an
as well.
honor. Yeah. Now, on the PYP website, when they list the program for Saturday's concert, they include a link to a performance of Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto on YouTube. It's performed by the Philadelphia Orchestra with Eugene Ormandy conducting, and the soloist is the legendary Itzhak Perlman. I'm guessing he's a big influence on your own playing.
Of course, I look up to Mr. Perlman so much, and I think, I mean, I've been lucky enough to attend a few of his live performances, like when he came to Portland to play with the Oregon Symphony, and I was like 8 years old at the time, but just like seeing him play like one of the pieces that I was also working on at the time, it was just so cool, and I really do look up to him. I still listen to his performances like basically every week, so.
Now, coincidentally enough, Perlman will be in Portland next week. Did you know that? Performing a recital at the Schnitzer. You're shaking your head yes, so you know. Are you going, Hanami, and is there a chance you'll get to meet him?
Yes. So unfortunately, I cannot go because I have to go back to my school
Oh,
in
Mercer. Yeah, in
Georgia.
Georgia.
But I heard he was coming and I was, oh my gosh, if I was able to go, that would be amazing. But I'm sure it will be spectacular. So.
And there'll be other opportunities, I'm sure, in your future. Now, as we mentioned, and you're going back next week, you're studying now at Mercer University at their Robert McDuffie Center for Strings. What is the McDuffie Center for Strings, and why did you choose to continue your musical education there?
The McDuffie Center for Strings at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia, I feel like there is such a unique and special program there. And of course, there is amazing faculty and there are such wonderful opportunities, but I really liked the program, like the way they do their curriculum. So our degree is called Music, a Bachelor of Music with electives in Business. So at the McDuffie Center, we feel like we're in a conservatory and we have like our regular lessons, rehearsals, and concerts, but we also take classes at Mercer University, and not all of these are music classes. Like, of course, we have our regular like music history, music theory, stuff like that, but we also take business, accounting, and marketing. And I feel like it's very important because this helps us so that when we graduate McDuffie Center, then we are not only musicians, but we also know how to market ourselves and even create a business so that we can have a successful career.
Oh, that's great skills to have for any artist now, especially where a lot of people have to promote themselves and market themselves. Now, on the website for the center, it says that their graduates usually pursue advanced degrees at prestigious graduate schools, and they list a few, Juilliard, Manhattan School of Music, New England Conservatory. Is grad school in your plans after you finish Mercer?
So right now, I'm a sophomore at the McDuffie Center, so I don't have like exact plans, but to be honest, I would like to go to grad school, but I'm also interested in looking at other options. And I am still wondering what I want to do exactly in my career because I love playing in orchestra, but I also love chamber music and stuff like this. When I get to play with PYP and play a solo with orchestra, it is also such an amazing feeling. So I'm still trying to decide, in the midst of deciding.
Now, in addition to your skills as a virtuoso on the instruments, the violin and the piano you play, you also compose music, I read. Have you written any violin concertos yet?
So interesting enough, I've actually only composed for piano. And I don't know why, but every time we have like a, I'm in a composing class at my school, but it's just we can choose which instrument to compose for. And for some reason, it just came very natural. Like I wanted to do it on piano. And I feel like because I chose to play violin, like mainly, I don't want to say I miss piano, but I still really want to keep piano a part of my life. So this is like a good way for me to stay connected to that.
And one more musical question, but not having to do with piano or violin. In the bio, it also says you enjoy going out and doing karaoke with your friends. I was just curious, do you have like a go-to song?
Well, usually the thing is at my house, we have this like karaoke system, but it's a very old system and it's from Japan and all the songs on there are like in Japanese and I'm fluent in Japanese, but they are from like 50 years ago. So I can't really name, I feel like even if I name some, no one will know them, but I just love to do that with my friends or with my family. It's a nice like bonding activity.
Well, Hanami, thanks so much for talking with us today. I know it's a very busy week for you and we wish you all the best on Saturday.
Thank you so much for having me.
We've been talking with Hanami Froom, an 18-year-old alumna of Portland Youth Philharmonic and soloist on the opening concert's Violin Concerto by Tchaikovsky. The concert takes place this Saturday, November 9th, at Portland's Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall, starting at 7:30 p.m. You can find out more online and purchase tickets in advance at portlandyouthphil.org. This is Ken Jones for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Joining me is Jeremiah Hayden, reporter at Street Roots, to talk about his latest article. It's called Senator Wyden Introduces Bill Protecting Low-Income Tenants. Local tenants at the Russell Apartments demonstrate the power of organizing as Wyden seeks to expand protections to renters of all income levels. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. There's two components to this story we'll get into. First is the organization of a tenants union at the Russell Apartments. What was happening leading up to this union's formation?
So the Russell Apartments is just up in North Portland, and they had this experience that sort of brought them together, during which their elevator, it's a six-floor apartment building, and their elevator went out, and the management company did not fix that for 4 months. So a lot of neighbors were pretty frustrated by that. Somebody ended up kind of getting in touch with some other organizers, and they began knocking on doors, finding that, a big surprise, a lot of the neighbors agreed that that was an issue, particularly people with disabilities and people, you know, trying to just carry groceries up and down the stairs. And that sort of brought them together to start talking about some of the other issues that they had with their apartment managers, Try-On Living. And they sort of just found that everybody had similar things. A lot of the amenities that they had basically been promised in their rentals agreement and the things that are up on the website for the apartment complex just really were not being provided by the management company. So the Russell Apartments organized through, like, with organizers from Portland Tenants United, also through the Rental Action Network.
You mentioned Portland Tenants United, which conducts an annual renter survey. With this idea of tenants unions, but also more broadly what renters are looking at, what kind of trends have they noticed?
Portland Tenants United just recently published their survey. It's more than 200 respondents, renters in Portland, outlining their concerns about renting in Portland. So 43% of the respondents said that managers didn't do necessary maintenance after the tenants reported it. And another 40% said that the maintenance was incomplete or of very poor quality when it was done. So this is like something that I think anybody who rents in Portland and beyond has likely experienced. And I don't think that those numbers are particularly skewed. I think that's something that people have a very common experience in renting with landlords who don't take care of necessary maintenance.
Well, that gets into the second component of this story, which is that Oregon U.S. Senator Ron Wyden is among those putting forward the Tenants' Right to Organize Act. What would that do?
Senator Wyden, joined Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman, Bernie Sanders, and some others to introduce this bill, attempting to address inequalities in organizing rights for people who receive housing assistance. So just to make this distinction, the sort of the people who are renting at fair market rate have this right to organize, and then people who are receiving low-income housing vouchers or like HUD vouchers don't necessarily have that right yet. So this Tenants' Right to Organize Act is trying to amend the U.S. Housing Act of 1937 in order to promote the establishment of tenant organizations and expand protections for residents who are receiving federal income assistance.
What are some of the benefits of forming a tenants' union?
Something that I think people don't realize is just how relatively easy it can be to start a tenants' union. You can get together with your neighbors, you can say, we vote on this, we are now a tenants' union, and then you can begin working together to address those things. Again, it's much like the, you know, the labor unions, where working in solidarity with the people around you who share these common issues are far more powerful working together than trying to go about it in an individual way. So you know, this bill, one of the things that this is trying to help address is to promote this idea, educate people about what it is that they can do to force their landlords to respond meaningfully to their requests.
And how do these actions fit into the larger conversation about the affordable housing crisis?
One of the things that occurs to me is that, you know, the U.S. Housing Act of 1937 was trying to remedy unsafe housing conditions and address the affordable housing shortage at that time. It sort of specifically was saying that the federal government can't provide on its own housing for every American citizen. Of course, you can debate whether or not that's true or whether that's just sort of a matter of will. But it did specifically say even then that it's the responsibility of the government to promote and protect the independent and collective actions of private citizens to develop housing and strengthen their neighborhoods. So in talking to Ron Wyden about this bill, one of the things that really came out of that conversation is that this kind of gives people the power that they need, gives them the right that they don't at this point have to band together and then in each individual neighborhood and each individual apartment begin to like change the dynamics and actually have a bit of power in working together with a landlord to improve conditions right there on the ground level rather than sort of a top-down approach.
To go back to that, were the tenants at the Russell apartments successful?
They were able to get a reimbursement for some of the issues with the elevator. They also had raised a host of other concerns. As soon as the apartment manager, there was an on-site manager at first, and as soon as that apartment manager moved out, the management company didn't hire another one, and that's when they really started to see these things start to degrade. So a lot of the amenities they were promised didn't exist anymore, started to fall off. And so whether or not they were successful is sort of still to be determined. Sometimes, as is common with these, landlords can end up trying to do like union busting techniques where they kind of peel one person off and pay them this much, peel another person off and pay them a different amount, things like that. So successful in the sense that they have organized and have written their demand letters and have provided clarity in what they're looking for. Successful as far as having all the needs met is still to be seen.
What are the key takeaways that you hope people get from this story?
Well, I think that it is really important for people to recognize that they have the power to work together to live in a safe environment, regardless of whether or not they are receiving housing vouchers or if they're like the Russell Apartments tenants who are mostly paying fair market rate. The things that are promised to a person in a rental agreement are legally binding and they should exist there. And if those things are not happening, there are places that people can go to get help with that stuff. Unfortunately, legal help is pretty scarce when it comes to these kinds of issues and the kinds of resources that are required to meaningfully fight back against a landlord, can be a little bit of a challenge. But people can do it, and much like the labor movement, banding together and speaking out is empowering, and generally people have the right to do it.
Where can folks find out more if they're interested?
You can get street roots from a vendor in your neighborhood, and they accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Jeremiah. Appreciate it. That was Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots speaking with me about his latest article. It's called Senator Wyden Introduces Bill Protecting Low-Income Tenants. More information is online at streetroots.org. For KBOO News in Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
listening to KBOO Portland.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7